Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 4, Text 4. Translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Actually, Betty, you lead the, because save my voice.
Tam.
Tam.
Anvagachan.
Anvagachan.
Dutavikramam.
Dutavikramam.
Satim.
Sati.
Ekam.
Ekan.
Trinetra.
Trinetra.
Anucharaha.
Anucharaha.
Sahasrashaha.
Sahasrashaha.
Saparshadayakshaha.
Saparshadayakshaha.
Manimat madadayaha. Puraha Vrisha Indraha. Tarasa. Gatavyathaha. Tamanvagachan Drutavikramam Satim. Ekam Trinetra Anuchara Sahasrashaha. Saparshadayaksha Maniman Madadayaha. Puro Vrishendras Tarasagatavyathaha. Tamanvagachan Drutavikramam Satim. Ekam Trinetra Anuchara Sahasrashaha. Saparshadayaksha Maniman Madadayaha. Puro Vrishendras Tarasagatavyathaha. Tamanvagachan Drutavikramam Satim. Ekam Trinetra Anuchara Sahasrashaha. Saparshadayaksha Maniman Madadayaha. Puro Vrishendras Tarasagatavyathaha. Tam, Har, Sati, Anvagachan, followed, Drutavikramam, leaving rapidly, Satim, Sati, Ekam, alone, Trinetra, of Lord Shiva, who has three eyes, Anucharaha, the followers, Sahasrashaha, by thousands, Saparshadayakshaha, accompanied by his personal associates, and the Yakshas, Manimat Madadayaha, Maniman, Mada, etc. Puraha Vrisha Indri, sorry, Puraha Vrisha Indraha, having the Nandi bull in front, Tarasa, swiftly, Gatavyathaha, without fear. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. When they saw Sati living alone very rapidly, thousands of Lord Shiva's disciples, headed by Maniman and Mada, quickly followed her with his bull Nandi in front and accompanied by the Yakshas. Purport: Sati was going very fast so that she might not be checked by her husband, but she was immediately followed by the many thousands of disciples of Lord Shiva, headed by the Yakshas, Maniman and Mada. The word Gadavyathaha used in this connection means without fear. Sati did not care that she was going alone. Therefore, she was almost fearless. The word Anucharaha is also significant, for it indicates that Lord Shiva's disciples were always ready to sacrifice anything for Lord Shiva. All of them could understand the desire of Shiva, who did not want Sati to go alone. Anucharaha means those who can immediately understand the purpose of their master.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Janbuj karke. Sati knew that she was doing wrong, but still she did it. You can't expect a good result from that. She was going very fast so that she might not be checked by her husband, knowing that she had a different opinion to her husband and she should have followed her husband. Just like in the last verse, she describes as she's described as Straina Vimugha Dhi, being foolish due to her being a woman. So she knew all that, but still she deliberately did the wrong thing. And if such a big personality in the universe does something wrong, then we can't expect a good result of it. We find again in the sixth canto Parvati cursing Chitraketu. She said to him, "That why are you insulting Lord Shiva? Who do you think you are? We're no one else. There are all these rishis assembled here. They didn't criticize Lord Shiva for having me, Parvati, on his lap." But she also thought that, she didn't think that, well, none of them responded to Chitraketu. That's also a fact. None of them didn't respond to Chitraketu, so why should she? As we heard yesterday in the talk, there's a purpose to all of this. When such great personalities are involved, there's always some purpose, something didactic, which means morally instructive. We have the saying, I don't know if it's used in Hindi, but at least it used to be used in Bengali, Dakha Yagya or Daksha Yagya, which means when there's some turmoil and massive upheaval, then it's referred to as a Daksha Yagya. What turmoil comes from not following her husband? That is to be seen in this chapter. We already get a clue how this chapter is going to unfold if you happen to be going through it for the first time. As Parikshit Maharaj is, presumably, or maybe, he doesn't, from Parikshit Maharaj's questions, it seems that he doesn't know many of the things that we know very well, because we've heard the Bhagavatam so much, but he maybe doesn't know. Just like at the end of the, the end of the narration of Vritrasura, then Shukadev says, I heard it previously from my father, from Narada, and from one other thing, Angira. So the rishis had the time personalities like Shukadev had the time to hear all these things. And it is part of the culture that Kshatriya should also hear such things, but maybe Parikshit didn't know. So if you didn't know, you get a clue by seeing the chapter title, which is given here, Sati Quits Her Body. So one major lesson to be taken from this is to follow dharma by following your authority. Sati's husband, her authority, her guru was Shiva. She didn't follow, and it resulted in disaster. She couldn't understand why in this instance she should follow. She thought, anyway, I know, according to dharma I should follow, but according to what I feel like, I shouldn't follow. She gave her reasons also. She had her reasons. Everyone has their reasons. Arjuna has his reasons for not fighting, which they are actually very good reasons. But then Krishna had his reasons. And ultimately, Arjuna agreed to follow Krishna's reasoning. Although it might seem that Arjuna was right and Krishna was wrong. But then if we see the bigger picture, which Arjuna wasn't seeing, the whole universal plan of Krishna, then he should follow Krishna's plan. So in this regard, a question came up at the end of the class yesterday, because the point was being emphasized that, well, you should just follow your dharma. And then the point was raised, well, what about a situation? Yeah, a woman should follow her husband, because the husband is more sense-controlled. And the question was raised, well, often we see, or sometimes we see, but I'll change that to often we see, that a woman comes to Krishna consciousness and is more sense-controlled than her husband, more Krishna-conscious than her husband. So in that case, is it her duty to follow whatever her husband says? Is that right? Is that how the question was put? And we had a long answer in which the essence, which I took out of it, was that, well, we can't understand everything about dharma. It's beyond us to understand. But we should just follow anyway what our dharma is. And then the Dhammadaho asks if there are any more questions. And obviously more questions could come out of that. If you're going to talk about dharma, questions and discussions can go on forever and ever. So due to time limits, the discussion was terminated at that point. But I wasn't very satisfied with the reply. Although it's true on one level, but on another level, well, we're not going to be able to convince many people in the present day to follow dharma just because you should do it. That culture isn't there. That culture needs to be re-established. But to re-establish it, we're going to have to do that on the basis of understanding. And understanding dharma is very deep. Recently I was looking up on the internet something about one village in Bengal, which has been a Vaishnav village for generations. And I came across some, it just so happened that an American anthropologist had lived there and studied the culture. So I read, she wrote a whole book, or not very big. Yeah, I guess it could be called a book, a few essays. Getting really, because she spent, as anthropologists do, she spent hours and hours over 1.5 years talking with people and trying to understand their motives and why they think like this, why they do like that, and what they do and why they do it. But she missed the whole point. She probably got it, but she didn't highlight it. But she didn't understand it in our heart, that the basis of it is dharma. And that it was a Vaishnava village was only mentioned in passing. She didn't get into that at all. Because how much can you do when you're studying something? But the whole point that this Indian culture, Indian Hindu culture, as it stands today, if we say Indian culture, actually, of course, it's never heterogeneous in any part of the world. It is always heterogeneous, never homogeneous. In other words, it's not just one thing, but it's very varied with various nuances. But we speak of Indian culture, but Indian Muslim culture is very different to Indian Hindu culture. Although there are influences, no doubt. But the basis of it is dharma, and that's under massive attack at the present time, both ideologically and behaviorally. I was unpleasantly surprised in Puri just now to see the number of women going around with Western-type skirts, and the sari wearing was mostly just older, Oriya, lower class women. That was in Puri. If you go interior, it'd be different. But in Delhi, we might not be so surprised. Delhi, Bombay, Pune, but Puri, it's a holiday place. People come to enjoy, I guess. But otherwise, Orissa is very traditional, generally. Backward, they call it. Yeah, that's also a factor, because it's not so economically well-developed. So anyway, I wasn't very satisfied with that answer. One thing, if you just say you can't understand it and you should just follow it, we're not going to be able to convince many people to follow it. And that's one thing. When I remember I was first in India in the 1970s, we often used to hear people talking about Hindu rituals, and they didn't like the idea. You saw so many rituals and no one understands what they are, and what's the point? We often used to hear this. And actually they didn't understand. I remember in Vizag, this was Vishakhapatnam, the nearest major city to here, I guess. There was some young priest, chanted a whole bunch of mantras. And when he'd finished, I asked him what they meant. He said, "I don't know, I don't have to. My father taught me, and he never taught me what he." And that's something like the Kama Mimamsa idea. You don't have to know what it, you just do it, that's all, and you get the result. Just like when you put on your computer, you don't have to know how it works, you just use it, that's all. So you just say the mantras, and you don't have to know what they mean, you just chant them, that's all. So, lack of knowledge of why we're doing, then why do it? Why do it? And then don't do it. And that's what happens. Don't do it. People won't do it if they don't understand why they should do it. And I observe that this is widespread in our ISKCON today also. That why should you do Varnashram Dharma? What do you need? You can chant Hare Krishna. You don't need Varnashram. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu clearly says you don't need it. Of course, Prabhupada wanted to establish it, but really? Let's skip that part. You don't need it. Someone else can do somewhere, sometime. Better not. Some come to that conclusion. They don't seem to understand the need, and they don't seem to understand that this Western materialistic culture is, in and of itself, it is soul-killing. They seem to think that it's okay, and seem to think that it's normal and okay that even you'd raise your children the best you can in Krishna consciousness, but they don't become Krishna conscious because they get a phone and then they follow all the boys follow the other boys in having long hair and being rebellious, and because that's what every generation of Hare Krishna children do. And yeah, after some time they'll become Krishna conscious with their long hair and their tattoos and their sexy kirtans, and that's it. That's the best you can hope for. So I wasn't very satisfied. I thought also that if we tell that this principle could be very much. I wasn't very satisfied with that answer, because this principle is open to gross misuse. So the husband tells the wife, okay, you follow what I say. You cook beef for me and you eat it too. So there's a tension between following worldly dharma. There can be a tension, and there often is, between following worldly dharma and following Bhagavad dharma. There often is a tension. My answer would have been that, in general, we want to encourage worldly dharma as far as possible, as much as it is conducive to Krishna consciousness. And in general, it is conducive, but we have to see every case individually. Because dharmic principles are given, which should generally be followed, but there have to be exceptions always, and much that we see in Mahabharata arises from exceptions. How to deal with exceptions. The whole of Mahabharata is one dharma sankat after another. The most famous dharma sankat means when you're in a position where two principles of dharma, they coincide with each other, and the most famous of that is that of Arjuna, who, at the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, what he said was, his main argument for not fighting was, adharma bibhavat Krishna, it will be against dharma. And what he said was correct, to attack your gurus is against dharma. And the whole situation which will arise will be against dharma at one level, but then there's always going to be some tension between one principle of dharma and another. One principle of dharma is to offer protection to those who deserve to be protected by you. Another principle of dharma is to tell the truth. But sometimes to protect, you have to tell lies. As in the story of the, which I've told many times, of the the truthful Brahmin who by his truthfulness caused the murder of a man who was running away. So which is correct? And for that we need Brahmanas whose one main quality is nirapekshata, they're neutral. They're able to say because they don't, whatever they say will not be for their personal gain. Because they have no motive for personal gain. Bhishma, the great proponent of dharma, the best knower of dharma, Krishna himself said to Yudhishthira, you want dharma explained? Don't ask me. Go and ask Bhishma. But he himself, when it was an obvious case of Draupadi being grossly mistreated, and she asked, is this dharma? And Bhishma waffled. He didn't give a clear reply. He said, well, dharma is very subtle, it's very difficult to understand. I'm standing here. What is your... He avoided. Because... it's stated that because he was accepting maintenance from Dhritarashtra, that he couldn't speak against the desire of Duryodhana. So we have it. It's a very delicate thing, and re-establishing is a great challenge. The whole culture, it requires everyone to participate in it. Everyone has to have the same understanding. But even that idea is preached against in the educational institutions, that you should have your own idea. Don't follow anyone else's idea. And if you accept that idea, then you're following someone else's idea. You follow the idea to have your own, you should just think for yourself and have your own ideas, and if you accept that, then you're following someone else's idea. You can't avoid it. So we're trying to establish better to follow Krishna's idea. And for that, we're going to have to demonstrate it, because especially in the present age, people, they're not very philosophical, and they want to see, they believe in seeing. I believe in seeing as one of the reviewers for Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is wrote, this was way back in the 1960s, that I'm paraphrasing, that if truth is that which works, as William James and the pragmatists insist, one school of philosophy, American pragmatism. In other words, the best philosophy is that which works in real life, which is a development, I guess, from utilitarianism, the greatest good for the greatest number of people. So he said, if the truth is that which works, then Bhagavad Gita is probably pretty good, because those who follow it, the members of the Hare Krishna movement, seem to be a pretty happy bunch. I'm paraphrasing. So we need to demonstrate that, how living according to dharma, living simply, living in a manner deliberately eschewing sense gratification, makes you healthy, wealthy, and wise. Healthy, wealthy, and wise. This is from an English saying. Early to bed and early to rise makes you healthy, wealthy, and wise. I suspect that's something to do with Protestantism also. The Protestant ethic of work hard, believe in God, and you'll get rich. You'll be prosperous. So you have to rise early if you're going to work hard. Not spend all night dilly-dallying around. So we want to show this practically. And people are impressed. Coming here, they are impressed. This place has become, in a short time, it's a tirtha. Because people come. Just around the time of Sankranti, I was told, there are 2,000 people coming a day throughout the period. That's quite a lot, considering it's remote on horrible roads to come here. But people, 2,000, that's not a small number. And so many books, 68 big books were distributed yesterday, and so many other books. And how? Well, it's just people come and just have a book table and people buy books. In the middle of the week. It's not a holiday season. So it's become a tirtha. Which, who are the deities? The deities are Nimai Nitai and Tribhangananda. They're coming to see you. There's no fancy temple. There's no deity per se. They're coming to see people living a saintly, godly, simple life. It's impressive. There is a major Vaishnav Tirtha close to here, which those of you who are visiting here for the first time may wish to visit in your visit here. This village has the name Kurumagram because close to here is Sri Kurumakshetra, the temple of Kurumadev, the second avatar in the 10 avatars. I don't know any other Kurma temple, specifically Kurma temple. You'll get temples with various avatars, but I don't know. Even that, I don't know. It's the only one, it seems. So it is a major Vaishnav pilgrimage place, visited by Ramanujacharya as well. He took a journey from overnight journey from Puri to Sri Kurumakshetra. But presumably many people are going there also, but they're coming here. So it is something which has its appeal, that it's a preaching point also. As long as we just talk about it, no one's going to take it seriously. We have to demonstrate it also. Then people may start to take it seriously. I want to talk about this point more in our upcoming meeting. I didn't speak much on the verse or purport. I just extrapolated from it. Sati did not care that she was going alone, therefore she was almost fearless. There's a word for this in English. It's called recklessness. Where you do something without fear, but it's very dangerous. That's called reckless. And it usually ends up as a wreck, but it's a different spelling. It's not this. I don't think there's any word wreckfulness. There's only recklessness. So it's foolish fearlessness. Fear also has a function. It's a warning that we're heading for trouble if we don't rectify. Of course, in some cases, you can't. There's nothing you can do. If you're in the Gaza Strip at the present time, there's nothing you can do. There's nowhere you can go, because if you go outside, you're likely to be shot, and if you stay where you are, you're likely to be the subject of the ever-increasing figures of people killed. And, you can't go anywhere. So, you fear, but nothing you can do about it. But fear can be a warning to do something. Fight or flight. Either fight back against that which is threatening you, or run away. So it's a warning system also. But to be fearful is it's part of material existence. It's also important for aspiring transcendentalists to fear doing the wrong thing. We should be afraid. If we don't have pure love for Krishna, we should be afraid. If I don't follow sadhana, if I don't follow the four regulative principles, then I'll Mrityu Samsara Vartmani. I'll fall back into the horrible cycle of birth and death. At least we should be, for the very minimum reason, we should follow. And that applies to dharma also. Why should a widow not dress nicely, not eat nicely, not laugh, this, that? Well, it could be fear of social ostracism. And it could be also, well, fear that by doing those things, I'll cause pain to my husband in his next life, and I'll also have to suffer. So out of fear, a lot of dharma, a lot of the following of dharma, unless there's a motive to please Krishna, a lot of it is out of fear of the bad consequences. On the one hand, there is the lure of having a happy, materially happy future. And there's also the fear, if you do something wrong, you're going to have to suffer for that. And that's there in the Garuda Purana, read out at the deaths. It's too late at the time of death. They read out all the consequences, all the bad things, all the bad results you're going to get from all the bad things you do. But other people get to hear it. Probably at funerals, they're going to start having Bollywood music. They started having it at weddings, right? So why not at funerals? Why be miserable? Yavat jivet sukham jivet. As long as you live, be happy. I'm going to have to die soon, so let's have a Bollywood dance now. You never know how bad the society can become. It's hard to imagine. We couldn't have imagined a generation earlier, even a generation earlier, that transgenderism, even what is transgenderism? I never even heard of it. I mean, maybe you have that in who killed Bhishma? Shikhandi, yeah, in Shikhandi. You have that in Shikhandi, and then who is that also? Caused by Brihannala. Yeah, that's something like that. He's cursed to become a woman. What's his name? Cursed to become a woman. Then he's 1 month a woman, not one. Anyway. No. Puru took the old age of Yayati. Anyway, that's there in the eighth canto. Sudyumna becomes a woman and then a man. So there are things like that. But to be promoted as a regular part of human society, someone sent me a clip, YouTube clip. I mean, every day I get sent, and great majority I don't bother following them, but one of them I did, and it was a BBC interview of a man dressed as a woman with a full pink dress and pink tights and high heels, super feminine. Women themselves, even women who are being feminine don't be that feminine, and having an interview with him like he's a completely normal person. And if you say it's degrading, or a sign of degradation, then possibly you could be arrested and put in prison. I don't know, because a few years ago, I remember landing at Heathrow Airport in London, and everywhere there were signs. Any statements which are racist or homophobic, you can be arrested. So you're not even allowed to voice an opinion that the rampant promotion of homosexuality, is something wrong with that. you're like liable to be arrested. So we just don't know how bad the society is going to go. These communities are meant for making a clear cut. We don't want to. Our children. We don't want to send them to your schools. We don't want our children to be like. We don't want them to be like you. You don't have to say it. Just show it. You can say it also. The alternative is. It's all right. Maybe they'll become a transgender, but they'll still play the mridanga and have sexy kirtans. So, at least they're chanting Hare Krishna. What is the hope? What is the hope for the children if they're raised in this society? Practically, we don't see very much. It's not very good. Some of them are coming through somewhat. The best of them are coming through somewhat. But this whole idea of compromising with society, is this like, do you have to? Why? Srila Prabhupada had a better idea. It's Krishna, as he said himself, when Tamal Krishna Goswami said to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, you are the farm acharya. Which acharya in the history of Vedic culture recommend living on farm? None of them. Because, anyway, everyone was living. That was the way of life. But Srila Prabhupada said, no, Krishna is the farm acharya. Krishna and Balaram. Krishna with the flute. Why does Krishna have a flute? It's for the cows, theoretically. It's also for the gopis. But up to the present day, at least I've seen in this lifetime, I don't know if it's still going on, young boys going out taking cows with a flute. And the flute calls the cows. There you go. And Balaram has a plow for plowing the land. There's some theory that at some point in time there was no plowing. And then it was just, people were hunter-gatherers. And then they discovered agriculture. But Balaram is an eternal plower. So we don't accept that theory. So it's really a revolution, but we have to be revolutionary. The more we compromise, the more we lose. It's hard not to compromise in some way or other, but that is the challenge. And I'm going to finish the talk here now. Hare Krishna. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.